Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our May 6th
this meeting is now being recorded.
Access Task Force. I want to thank everyone for joining and devoting your time to the endeavor. I want to remind you, as you just heard in the recorded message, that today's meeting is an open one and is being recorded. So put on your very best Morgan Freeman voice if you want to speak up. Please say your name before speaking so we'll recognize you. And when you're not speaking, place your phone on mute to minimize background noise. If you can, please avoid putting us on actual hold because that may trigger music or pre-recorded messages. I also want to welcome anyone from the public who is joining us today. Thank you for taking your time to engage with this process. We need everybody and their support that we can get to advance the cause of language access in our courts. And now I'm happy to turn it over to Doug Denton from our staff for our roll call.
All right. People, if you could just indicate quickly if they're on the call. Justice Cuellar.
Yes, I'm right here.
Judge Covarrubias?
Yes.
Naomi Adelson?
Yes.
Judge Austin?
Yes.
Kevin Baker?
Yes.
Justice Berniers?
Yes.
Gracie Clark?
Yes.
Judge Conklin?
Yes.
Judge Court? Anna Maria Garcia? Judge Gard? Susan Maria Gonzalez, Judge Hayashi, Janet Hudak,
yes,
Alexandra Johnson, Joanne Lee,
yes,
Justice Marquez,
yes,
Yvette Pena,
yes,
Justice Renner,
yes,
Mike Roddy, Janine Tucker,
yes,
Dr. Valdez, Jose Varela, Judge Walsh, and Justice Dillon may join us late. So we have a quorum, Justice Cuellar.
Oh, terrific. Wonderful. So I'm going to move right ahead because we want to cover this and we want to make sure we use the time that we've got allotted. So you know we like to put our most exciting and important business first. So our first brief order of business is approval of the minutes. From our previous meetings, we've already circulated these minutes, so you should have had the chance to review them. We have one set of minutes for the January 27, 2016 meeting, another for the March 22, 2016 meeting. Do I have a motion to approve the January 27, 2016 minutes?
John Conklin, move to approve.
Second. Yvette Pena, second.
Excellent. Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Any against? It seems like the ayes have it, so repeating the process. March 22nd, 2016 minute meetings. Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved, Justice Breyers.
Excellent. And I think I heard a second from Yvette.
Yes, Your Honor.
Excellent. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Excellent. Anybody against? The ayes have it. Okay, so having gotten that done, what we need to do today is to discuss and hopefully approve the very general concepts to get the BCP process started for our second year of our task force. We very much appreciate all the input we've received from task force members and other stakeholders over recent weeks. In my mind, the process of crafting these ideas has been really organic from the work of the task force over the last few months. Many of the suggestions we've gotten over that time frame, but also more recently, we've tried to include in preparation of this document. We've heard from subcommittee chairs, from stakeholders, from members of the task force otherwise. What we tried to do on Tuesday was to circulate the draft BCP to the task force. And we've since received further input from some task force members, which we've tried to take into account in how we frame the discussion today. Now, I'll be honest, and I will say that we are still trying, with the help of our staff, to fine-tune this process, and we're working to get these kinds of documents to you as quickly as we can for your feedback. We're sorry this didn't occur even sooner, but I do want to underscore two things. The first is that this is really only the start of the process. We have opportunities to weigh in as the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee and other parts of the Judicial Council process play a role in determining what of these priorities might be included in the Judicial Council's request. Second point I want to emphasize is that what you see in what was circulated is not something that reflects the process that just began a few days ago. It really does reflect the kind of input we've been getting over time. And one of the reasons why we were not able to circulate sooner is we wanted to take account of some subcommittee meetings that were happening and to get that kind of input included as well. So what we'll do now is to give you a brief overview of what the document indicates, along with a tentative set of priorities that we propose in response to some of the feedback we've been getting. Then you're going to hear from Judge Austin, his capacity as chair of our budget subcommittee for the task force. Then Judge Covarrubias and I will say a little bit more briefly about the concepts, since you've had a chance to read them, no doubt. So any of the concepts that Judge Austin does not mention in his own discussion, we will highlight. And then we'll hear any further feedback or comments that the task force has, and then we'll take a vote. So the draft BCP currently includes 8 items in response to your feedback and to some thinking that we've done. What we recommend is the following set of priorities. The first priority that we've identified, the one we put at the very top, is a statewide recruitment initiative for qualified court interpreters and multilingual staff. That fits with the feedback we've gotten from trial courts, from interpreters, from task force members. Then following that, we recommend prioritizing administrative supports and non-VRI equipment to help support language access expansion, primarily in our trial courts. Third, training and signage grant program. Fourth, standards and training for bilingual staff and court interpreters. Fifth, implementation and support for the pilot program around VRI. Sixth, form translation and multilingual videos. 7 would be development and maintenance of the Living Toolkit, the website, which is starting to get some hits and has been quite interesting and helpful to people, as I've been hearing from trial courts. And 8 would be money to help the work of the task force itself. So at this point, let me turn it over to Judge Austin so that he can share his thoughts about the draft BCP.
Thanks, Justice Cuellar. I'd like to start really by saying how impressed I am with the process that we're going forward to come up with these. I've been on a lot of committees and subcommittees and task force and things over the last 18 years, and usually when these kind of things are developed, it's done a little more staff and finance and people maybe informally submitting their thoughts. And not as much direct input as we're getting now. And I just think it's great because I think we're coming up with really good ideas, and I'm really happy that we're able to have input formally at the subcommittee level and at the full task force level with these, and I think they're going to be better for it. So let's start. Everybody's got the proposed BCPs in their packet materials. One thing that you may notice when you're going through them is that there isn't any request for additional funding for actually interpreter services. We had, as you know, last year we requested the $7 million, and that's now in the governor's proposed budget, and it looks like it's gone through both the Senate and the Assembly have agreed that is a good thing. It looks like we'll be getting that. You got to keep your fingers crossed. You never know what can happen in that process as we go through the May revise. And the general thought was, because of the fact that we have the surplus, the excess funds left over from the 45-45 money that's still there, starting to be dipped into a little bit, but we have quite a bit there on top of the $7 million that it looks like we're going to be receiving, that gives us quite a bit of funds. And it may not be the time to request additional ongoing funds until after we see how much of those funds that we have currently available we're going to be able to spend. So that was generally the thought when we had the subcommittee for the budget monitoring subcommittee meeting, why it may not be the time to request it right now. We could see how the spending goes over the course of the next year, how the models that are being developed both by the National Center for State Courts and now for our own research department over at the Council, those models on what the total costs are going to be for interpreter services and project it out when full expansion happens, and then perhaps come back in another year if we're going to need more money on an ongoing basis to do the expansion. So that's something that we thought of. If anybody has any other ideas on that as we're going forward and ask for comments, I think they'd be welcome. But I think I just know from the discussions that we've had, we felt that this was the best way to go and not request additional direct services money for interpreter services at this time. What we have done, though, is we have a number of, I think, innovative ideas. The one I want to talk about first is the statewide recruitment initiative for qualified bilingual staff and court interpreters. This is really, it's a funding that's going to be requested for kind of a pipeline development of court interpreters and bilingual staff. In talking to the CEOs and PJs and survey results, one of the biggest issues that has come forward that is that, and we've been discussing it on the on our LAP implementation group as well, is the perceived shortage of interpreters and the difficulties people are having to get certified qualified interpreters to come in as the expansion is going forward. And really, even more than that, concerns about as we get even farther along in expansion that we're not going to have enough. So this is a way for us to perhaps address at least some of the reasons for that and see if we could get increase the pool of people. One of the great ideas is to see whether or not we could focus on people that came close to passing the test and see if we could keep them along in the process so that they perhaps can get the necessary skills to increase the passage rates. There are other factors. You'll see them all laid out in the materials that we have about how the funds would potentially be spent and what services would be we given. The monies from the fund establishment really goes for staffing and ongoing recruitment efforts. There'd be some for annual media buys so that we get the word out. Some for that near passer and experienced interpreter workshops. And there'd be some additional kind of recruitment, travel related expenses that would go along with it as well. And we'd also get a limited term contract recruiter position included. Right now, the way that it works is pretty much all through CAP, and it's one of Ann Marks's many, many, many hats that she wears there. And I don't know if you're on the line, but perhaps you could comment.
I am on the line. Sorry, Ted Johnson. Was there anything specific that you wanted me to cover, or just some of the different things that we thought we'd be able to accomplish?
Well, anything you could talk about, just real briefly.
Sure. I mean, some of the things that keep coming up when we're out there is the need for skills training that might be remotely accessible because we don't have interpreter training programs throughout the state. So that's something that people in different communities around the state could have access to. We also regularly hear about the needs and challenges for internship type of training. And there are reasons that it might make sense to do that in different kinds of environments, including working with district attorney offices or public defender's offices. As we know, there's been some success in other states doing that sort of a thing. So I think that's one of the things we hear about most regularly. And touching on those two things, those are things that take time and will take staff time to be able to make happen. So I think those are some of the highlights for sure.
Thanks, Dan. Does anybody have any questions or comments or input on this request for further funding on the BCP?
This is Naomi Adelson. I had a comment. I do understand that that interpreter wages are bargained at the regional level, but that the Judicial Council is responsible for the per diem rate. A huge problem with recruitment is that we're seeing just such disparity between private sector, federal, and the state courts. And including immigration court has now come up to the federal rate. So that's a huge blockage to recruitment of interpreters, that there are no salary steps, that you go in and work for 30 years and stay at the same rate, and that you're not at all at the same as the federal rate. So we have with languages other than Spanish, the Chinese language interpreters do not want to come to court at all. because it's triple outside of court, the rate. So I do think that the language that the implementation task force could recommend that for recruitment, we need to start looking at wages and start looking at the per diem rate. So I do think that it is actually part of a task force to start talking about that stuff. Because if we can retain and recruit interpreters, then we can provide proper language access.
Does anybody have any thoughts on that?
This is Judge Covarrubias. I agree that that is part of the issue. But I remind everyone that it was in 1995 when this, one of the reports we had before that we had 1,525 certified Spanish language interpreter, and total interpreters are approximately 1,665, including Spanish and all other languages, both as certified interpreters. I believe read some of the registered. As of 2015, and looking at the Judicial Council website, we have where our number is now at 1,337, noting of Spanish certified interpreters, noting that it dropped down to under 1,000 in the year 2000. So in the past 20 years, there has not been an increase getting us back, and I think we have to develop this pipeline of interpreters. And we've also had the expression of comments made by several that it's also an aging population, that they are retiring. And I think Ms. Adelson is correct. We need to look at all avenues, but really see how we can work with the other institutions and having the monies available for this to be done. Because if we're going to expand, it appears apparent that many courts are having difficulty finding interpreters, and certainly the compensation is one issue, but it's also getting enough people to pass the exam to be able to serve as a certified or registered interpreter.
Anybody else on this topic?
This is Jen Asik, and I agree with both Naomi Adelson and Judge Covarrubias. However, for a lot of these institutions outside of court or outside of the interpreter world, be interested in interpreting, we do have to consider raising or making the wages more attractive. Especially, for example, people that are getting majors in Spanish in universities are probably going into a different field because it's just the wages are not that attractive, and I think that's something that the committee as a whole needs to really look at, especially if we want a long-term language solution.
I'll just jump in for a second here. I've been listening to the conversation. This is Justice Cuellar. I do think that there is something to how do we weigh in the appropriate way, recognizing what the practical constraints are, but also recognizing these realities people have mentioned, to see what can be done with respect to these issues, but yeah, including the per diem rate and other things. So I think we should definitely look into that. I will say that it's important to recognize, though, that the BCP process, which is about requesting funding for the programmatic work of the task force, is different. So I want to flag this issue. I want us to come back to it, but I also want to recognize that that's something that we cannot directly address. We can indirectly address it, and that's partly why we've got some of these items on the agenda, but the BCP process is kind of it's an awkward fit to it. I just want to make that point.
And this is Judge Conklin. I just wanted to comment real quickly on a more broad perspective. I appreciate the comment about the $7 million and how it's essentially separate from the BCP, it's clearly targeted towards expansion of interpreter services. But I think the committee needs to make clear that that should not be viewed in any way as showing there's a lack of these BCPs or the financial need of these BCPs. The money we have, the excess money, is ever decreasing, but that $7 million is targeted for somewhere else. So these BCPs stand separate from that and are very viable for that.
Exactly.
I'd also like to say, just on the question of the per diem rate, I know that topic is with a special subcommittee of the CEO's committee, SEAC, and they are hotly considering it right now. In fact, there's a conference call that I'm going to be on in my capacity as the chair of SEAC, and I think that we as a group might be able to weigh in on that process as well, because we've done a lot more research and understanding of those issues having to do with the pay rate and the availability of interpreters. And I think it's important for them to know and have a good background when they're the committee who's going to be really doing the recommendations on that, but so that they understand the issues when they're reaching those.
That makes sense to me, Judge Austin. This is Justice Square yet again, and I think we should look further into this and try to follow up on that.
Great. Any other thoughts on this BCP? We got a bunch more. Okay. The second one I wanted to talk about is the administrative support and equipment for other than VRI equipment to help support courts language access expansion. This one really in our subcommittee was the most popular, and it's very popular with the PJs and the CEOs, I know, because my other hat is a PJ. It's what I've been hearing really the most from people that are out in the trial courts, in the ones that aren't expanding as quickly as other courts are, as being one of the biggest barriers. The general feeling, this has always been covered in our general allotment, trial court funding, and been covering it just like we do any other administrative expenses. But this area with the expansion, as the services are going up, the need is there because we're trying to be more efficient, and so they're kind of top-loading a little bit more with some managers who could do better scheduling practices, better ways of coordinating services of interpreters so that there won't be as overlap or there won't be as much downtime. There'd be ways to do it in a more efficient way to allow us to expand more in a cost-efficient way. And it really is causing some problems in many of the courts, especially the ones that have some of the larger courts in Southern California are reporting it to us repeatedly. And so this is really there to try to address that. Funding would assist the courts to pay for services such as court interpreter supervision, coordination of scheduling or staff, translation, bilingual pay differentials, signage or language access related equipment. Some would be one-time money, and some would be ongoing money that would be paying for more would be the increased managers, people that would be able to do the scheduling and do other aspects that right now are not being funded. It would be money that would not be coming out of the 45-45 funding any at all. It would be probably a separate pot that would be used specifically for these type of expenses. And we're proposing that we use we make this at $4,346,000. And some of you might have seen the breakdown on that in the response to Naomi's email. We included the breakdown. Different amounts for small courts and medium courts and large courts are in there. And there's going to be about $700,000. It'll be one time for equipment in that. This, I think, is a really important one of these proposals for both to address a real need and to remove some of the barriers from courts that are having a hard time expanding because they feel that they are not afraid, but they are somewhat fearful of the increased expenses that could come with it. And so it's easier to not expand than it is to face that unknown. And this would, I think, allow us to make sure that everybody knows that they're going to get some funding to assist with the expansion in ways that aren't from direct interpreter services. Does anybody have any thoughts on this topic?
I have a question about this. This is Naomi Adelson. It says in this document here that court administrators are working with the bench on educating on working with a limited number of interpreters and the need for scheduling considerations. I'm just wondering, because I'm on the ground, I don't believe that that's happened.
Yeah, and so, it has in some places, but it hasn't happened in most places.
And I'm just I'm just wondering in general, because that would be wonderful, and it's a constant thing of the interpreter coordinator calling different courtrooms, constantly telling them, can you please give an interpreter priority? Can you please call the interpreter cases first? And they don't feel like they're able to tell judges that. I'm wondering if we're able to somehow, as the Language Access Task Force, if there's somehow we could, you know, encourage or ask or obligate the courts to do that?
That's a great question. and it's one of the many kind of things that are sort of embedded in the old way of doing things that are very hard to get people to change. And one of the things about this, if we could get this funding that to address some of that, or at least let the trial courts know to feel comfortable that they are going to get some funding to have maybe one person who goes around and does the training and helps set up coordination and tells the judges, this is where this would be really helpful, this is how we want to do it, and maybe set up some protocols with the PJ and the CEO's support, that it would be really helpful.
This is Judge Cordovez. I would just chime in that, you know, this is one of the issues that, again, have been raised by administrators, and we have to recognize that many courts are still suffering from the significant cutbacks we had in funding and have closed courtrooms, have lost staff, and they don't have the staff available. And the attention that needs to be placed to these issues, as we have found, as we've gone through, this opens up new issues every day. And to have someone dedicate to that, they really need to have some funding to help them do that. Some courts, may have to rely upon their ADA coordinator, or maybe we have to rely on someone else, and that's what I think this is intended to do, so we can have the funding so they can have a coordinator that can put the time and attention to follow up with the things that we are doing, to be the lead person, to be able to be accountable and respond when maybe there's not expansion going on and why they're not, but that takes resources. And I think that's what this is designed to do, so they can, in fact, coordinate and you'd be more efficient in providing and using the monies that are provided in scheduling, finding those other than Spanish interpreters, being able to network with others. That takes personnel and resources. And I think this would really assist them and be able to do that efficiently.
Yeah, this is Judge Conklin. I, again, as a judge on the ground, I appreciate that phrase. I agree. Judges need training. And I'm one of those, and I think constant reminders. I think this committee's even talked about a best practices bench card type of thing where a judge would have it in front of them when working with an interpreter. But I agree. I think judges would probably a little concerned about anything more than a best practices versus mandates type of thing. But I do agree that the judges really need to be reminded of those practices.
And this is Justice Cuellar. I agree as well, and I would just note that we're going to need a layered strategy here. Some of this is going to be about bench cards. Some of this is going to have to be about training. Some of it is the kind of outreach that we're trying to do to presiding judges, and I know that only goes a certain distance, but when you do show up in the local courts, talk to the presiding judges, talk to the local judges, I'd like to think that that helps move us in the right direction.
This is Bob Lowney. I'm here for the Education Subcommittee. That type of education training is very easy procedure to imbue throughout all of our training for judges as well as for court staff. We have an extensive amount of education in court processing, as you might imagine. But on the judicial side, that's something that I'm happy to take forward to all of our curriculum committees, like our high-volume cases or the SRL cases, especially like in family law and such, that we're able to imbue that. And so I'm happy to ensure that aspect of the message gets out in that venue, and of course there are other mechanisms as well, as you just pointed out, but to get that across, as well as the leadership programs. I directly do the leadership programs, the TJCEO Institute and the Supervising Judge Institute, and getting the word out at those two statewide programs, which touches virtually everybody in those audiences. That would be another effective way, I think, of getting the word down to the judges about sensitivity to that.
Thank you, Bob. We look forward to working with you on it. Judge Austin, anything else?
I think that's it for that one. And then I was going to turn it over to Judge Covarrubias for a couple.
Judge Covarrubias.
Thank you. The next item is that of training, signage, and grant programs for trial courts. Again, under the recommendations, that is the wayfinding, multilingual signage to be put out there, along with standards and trainings for bilingual staff and court interpreters. Certainly, we think the priority of that is for training for, as we expand into civil, for interpreters, because we have heard from the interpreters that they believe they would benefit greatly from additional training courses to be provided if we go on and use VRI, so there's appropriate training for them to have the training of the equipment, but also into the new disciplines to have a context, because again, going in and to interpret in an area where there is no understanding of how the system works, especially like in the areas of family law, that's just somewhat complex and very complex, and to have that focus as they go into the new area, again, because it's always been in criminal, I think it's really helpful for them to do that. And as indicated by Ann, we're looking at potential training models that could be done online as a more efficient way of providing not only training for the interpreters, but also for that of the bilingual staff that, again, that we're looking to increase and make sure they're providing and having the appropriate training that they'll need to be able to deliver the services that we believe are required under the Language Access Plan. And these are the monies, I think, that are being proposed, again, some ongoing amounts for the training programs that will need to be and continued on, development of the courses on a statewide basis for interpreters, as well as that of the orientation programs for and training bilingual staff. There's, again, as indicated on the budget change proposal draft, there's some proposed amounts of one-time funds and also ongoing funds to continue that that discipline. But I think it's a pretty self-explanatory what's been put on the draft. Any comments or questions?
This is Naomi Adelson. I had a question on that. In the response to my questions, I see that it says the task force will consider proposing an estimated $95,000 in one-time funding to develop curriculum and tools and provide introductory on-site workshops for the current interpreter pool. Are we including that now?
Yeah, I believe so. That was included within this.
Yes, that would be my observation. I think I would treat that as responding to the feedback, figuring out how to allocate the $1.5 million, but we could certainly include it in that context.
Okay, because I do definitely support that. And also, I just wanted to say, updating the online orientation to include more on civil is great, because the online orientation also has to be modified because it is incorrect about where interpreters are required now. But also that the online orientation is for newly entering interpreters, and interpreters that are already working can do it, but they don't know about it at all. So they would not be reached by that, and that is why I was insistent on something for the current interpreter pool. So I'm pleased to see that there.
Point taken. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? I'll pass it back to Justice Cuellar.
Thank you very much. I want to mention three items that are really part of the bread and butter of the task force, things that are mentioned prominently in the Language Access Plan in different ways and that I think are all important. Just mention them briefly and then hear any comments or thoughts on them. The first is support for the VRI spoken language pilot implementation. And the reason I want us to include support for this is because really the whole point of a pilot project is to proceed with care on this front and to focus on learning. And to do that right, we need some resources. So while total funding is not something we've figured out exactly, we do know we're going to need some staff. So we're proposing a certain amount of money to just get that process begun. Then kind of in the same vein, we talk a lot in the Language Access Plan about the importance of translating forms and creating multilingual videos. The capacity we have to do that is really quite limited without some additional funding. So we're asking for about $600,000, $650,000 for the next fiscal year, and then about $400,000 for the following fiscal year, to make it easier for us to translate these forms and make them available to people across the state who need them. And then the Language Access Toolkit, which is working and seems to be the kind of thing that people are asking for that can play this role of helping to educate folks who need access to information about language access, it's up and running, but a very important priority for us in the task force is to make sure that we don't have this be kind of a tool to generate interest that will dissipate after a couple of years, but instead to make sure that we develop a real framework for keeping things up to date, for keeping them current, and for making things useful to people over the long run. And sadly, what happens with a lot of web-based tools is after that initial spurt of interest to set them up, things get cast aside, maybe forgotten a little bit, unless you have the right people and the right commitment to it. So we're asking for some resources to help develop and maintain the Language Access Toolkit. Jessica Covarrubias? Oh, actually, first let me pause for a second and hear if anybody has any comments or questions about these. Okay, hearing none, Judge Covarrubias?
Thank you, Judge Cuellar. The next one is that of funding for the implementation task force and our work that we're doing, including some more consultants to assist the task force. And certainly that is something of great need. One of the concerns that have been raised by many is, again, not having enough time to review the documents that we prepare, but we are so short on staff to even assist us. They work very hard and have a variety of, they wear a variety of hats and have a variety of projects, and they work effortlessly and tirelessly. And we know sometimes we get emails back, well after 5 o'clock and into the evening hours, and then have very short turnaround times they have to make, for all the deadlines that they have. And for us to continue our work on the implementation, again, to make sure that the 75 recommendations that have been adopted by the Judicial Council as its policy and meet our very ambitious deadline to have everything in place by 2020, we certainly need funding to the task force for us to be able to meet, to be able to have and meet our deadlines and really be a meaningful task force. So those are the items indicated from the general funds and augmentation. They get about $300,000. For 2017-18 and continuing on in 2018 and 2019 to be able to accomplish the tasks that we have been assigned to implement and also to monitor the language access plan that has been adopted. Any questions or comments that people may have? Hearing none, then I'll pass it back over to Justice Cuellar.
Thank you, Judge. So at this point, I want to ask if anybody has any last questions about the overall approach we've taken here. Okay. I would like to ask to see if anybody has a motion that we can submit the draft BCP concepts with the understanding that they'll include the priority order we discussed. And from there, staff, of course, will send everyone a revised list of BCP concepts next week.
Judge Conklin, so moved.
Thank you. Do I hear a second?
Judge Gard, second.
Thank you, Judge Gard. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you, everyone. This is a step forward, and again, we're going to work with staff to prepare these concepts, and over the next few months, we will shepherd the concepts through the Judicial Council's approval process. We'll try to report back as much as we can, and we are grateful the work continues. I want to highlight in particular one thing I appreciate not only about this call, but about the process that led up to it is we've identified some things that could have been included in the BCP. We tried to do so, but there have also been some items that have been mentioned that really are more general in scope and no less important, including, for example, the points that were made about per diem. And Judge Austin, I appreciate your bringing up that that process is playing out in some ways elsewhere in the Judicial Council, and we might look to see if we can inform that based on the experience that some of our task force members have on the ground. I think that's crucial because, in the end, not everything is about budgets, I've often tried to highlight to people that we cannot do a language access expansion and an honoring of what's in the language access plan without money. But by the same token, we also need to make sure those resources go as far as possible and they're used wisely by taking account of all the wisdom that's represented in the task force and among all the stakeholders that are trying to weigh in. So with that, you have my appreciation, and we will see you at our next business meeting to take place in San Francisco in a couple of days on May 20th. Thank you, everyone, and thank you to our staff for doing all the good work that went into this call.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.